I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Cubs win. Gordon Whittenmeyer taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse.
Cubs win.
Chicago Cubs. Yeah.
The Chicago Sun-Times. Gordon Whittenmeyer.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Whittenmeyer joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. And Gordon, of course, working for the Chicago Sun-Times, the only paper in town that covers the White Sox, oddly enough, and he covers the Cubs. Good morning, Gordon. How are you?
Morning, Gordon.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're living the dream, buddy, and it's been fun to watch the way the Cubs are playing and to see, Cole Hamels has an off night, and yet you can turn around and there you got Chatty waiting in the wings, ready to go. And it's kind of reminds you of what they managed to do with that one start by Yu Darvish, that Marshall came in and was better than Darvish, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how they're doing everything they're doing, but, a team that's blown half its saves this year and has seven different guys that have done it, that they're closing out games, they're walking off. Their lineup that was supposedly broke at the end of last year didn't really add much of anybody, and is scoring more than anybody else in the National League. So some things have been fixed for sure.
Okay, let's get to that for a second, Gordon. I appreciate everything where you're coming from. You wrote about yesterday the bullpen that is actually that's going to need some reinforcement. But really, did Theo overreact when he called the offense broken last October? When you look at the numbers, 40 games where they scored one or fewer runs.
Bryant was hurt.
But it was broken,
yeah.
Right? I mean, that's not an overreaction. That was an assessment.
But part of what's fixed the offense is having him back as a MVP candidate.
Absolutely. But do you think it was?
I think that's 100% true. I think when you look at it, it wasn't broke. It was some of it was what was going on in the game at large. There was some feast and famine in the game too. But the guys, Chris Bryant, not being able to hit for power, having that shoulder problem, being on the DL for a while, and then even when he was back, not being himself, was huge. He was not a fluke as an MVP that year, and he was actually in 17 probably in many ways better than he was in 16, and didn't win the MVP. And he started off in 18 just as good as he had either of those other 2 years. So when he went the other way, that's a huge bat you're taking out of that lineup. All the rest of the year, even when he was in there. So that's huge, and what that does for everybody else. I mean, just look at the other night, the struggles they had when Javi wasn't in there. That's a big deal. And so that was the biggest part of it. And then the part where he didn't overreact and the part where he's absolutely on spot on was the young guys and whether they were going to become what they thought they were going to become. And most of them are kind of as collectively taking at least another half step forward this year. Mm-hmm. So whatever they did in the offseason on that stuff, maybe that's part of it. When I was talking to guys in the clubhouse last night, there was a lot of talk about Javi talked about learning from each other, and Hamels talked about some of the efforts in the offseason in the spring about cohesiveness and doing a lot of things together and communicating. So maybe some of those efforts paid off for some of those younger players too.
It's interesting because I think that when we start talking about the Cubs right now, most of the conversation is you know, is Javi the MVP or is it Chris Bryant? Is, you know, is Rizzo going to lead him in
Wilson
home runs?
Or
is it, exactly. I mean, these are, there's like four names we're throwing around when we're talking about how good they are on a daily basis. And that's not even taken into account. You know, again, Elmora all of a sudden is hitting, which we didn't expect, but he becomes a guy that you got to leave in the lineup.
No question. And a lot of people wanted to leave him there anyway just because of his glove. So now you get the plus glove in center field at a position where that matters more than most. And he's hitting on a regular basis. And he's hitting right-handers better than he has, which I always thought was kind of a goofy reason to leave him out of the lineup anyway. Righties aren't like lefties in that way. But I think that's probably a trickle-down effect from everybody else doing these amazing things ahead of him in the order. He's coming up. Well, last night was a classic example. He came up twice with the bases loaded. And the first time, he grounded out. The second time, hits the grand slam. Both cases hit the ball hard, but he's coming up with situations where they have to come into the strike zone and pitch to him, and he's doing something with it. So again, few guys, that's the difference in, again, go back to Chris Bryant. You know, you got these guys ahead of Elmora doing what they're doing. It creates hitting situations for him. He becomes a better hitter, but that's what a guy or two guys that are that good in a lineup can do for those guys around him.
Gordon, Tyler Chatwood, 2-0 with 1.38 ERA in his last five outings. Mike Montgomery's value speaks for itself, and you see him, you know, being your sixth starter. Chatwood may be your seventh starter. Can you weigh their value to the Cubs in their roles versus their value to potentially trade partners for a reliever?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, first of all, Chatwood still got that contract tied around his neck, so that's part of the deal there. I don't know that you can move that entire contract even with him pitching the way he is. Although, once you get to the trade deadline, you're talking about less than a year and a half on the deal. So the value goes up in that way, too. But then, he's a swing and miss guy for you. You don't have very many of them on the staff. And that bullpen, you know, you've got him and Strope, who's on the DL, and Carl Edwards, who's still struggling to kind of get back to form. And you don't have anybody else out there like that. So his value, if he keeps doing what he's doing, is hard to measure for what this team wants to try to do, if assuming he can keep it up, and that's a big assumption. Do you have enough depth to trade from your starting pitching depth? But that is a scary place to start trading from,
right,
when you're a team trying to win. So
and when you have pitchers that are aging and you don't know what the future looks like, right?
Exactly. So what you can get back, obviously, would be critical. But I just don't think it makes no sense to me to trade productive major league pitching from a staff that's trying to win a championship in order to bring back another pitcher. Right.
Well, I agree with you, but I just wonder. We keep talking about this reliever out there that they're going to make a deal for. What are you going to give up to get somebody of quality, of value?
You can give up hitters, you can give up prospects, for whatever that's worth, you know, in their system. I mean, they've got a few guys. They can piece something together. I don't know that, you know, you're probably not going to go find that Chapman type of pitcher that they got in 16 unless you go sign Kimbrel, unless you do something like that, which I still don't think. I don't see that happening unless Crane thinks he's really got all that TV money coming in as fast as he does. Well,
I think he thinks that, though, Gordon. Didn't you see that this week? He said,
yeah,
the money's
that.
On the way. Money's coming.
Money's on the way, a whole bunch of money, and he didn't seem to put that in the context of any other factors. Well, we'll see. Maybe he can write Theo a check.
Okay, so we look at this team and we look at the way they're going, and then I forget what the exact stat was. I think it was in the last eight games, the bullpen had a 5.05 ERA. That's going into last night. That you know, it's as much as they're winning and as much as they got five walk-offs and as much as they got a lot of guys contributing, that's still out there. That is still – and it's not just the end of the bullpen, you know. It's you might need a couple moves.
Well, it's the end of the bullpen where you need to make the moves. Because then all of a sudden all these other guys start being fifth, sixth, seventh inning guys as you need them in the middle innings. But now you've got multiple options in the seventh. You've got you can match up better, and you and all these guys become that much better. So it will look. You mentioned the ERA. The ERA is indicative to some extent, but to me, what's indicative is the blown saves. Every time you get into these close leads late, it's cross your fingers. It's white knuckle time. You throw any cliche at it you want, but it's all top step stuff. So you know you don't know that you can close games, and it's seven different guys that have blown a save. So it also tells you. I mean, if you didn't already know it, it tells you you don't have a closer, and you don't know that Morrow's coming back. So that's a huge deal too. If you were supposed to know by May, you're supposed to know by right about now whether you got Morrow back at any strength. And he's just now starting up another throwing progression in Arizona. So that's sometime in July, probably mid-late July at the earliest, if everything goes well with no other setbacks. And then you got to baby him at that point when you bring him back, because you don't know what you got, and you have to make sure you don't overuse him. So he can't be classically used even if he comes back. And Strope will be fine. And, you know, after that, there really is no high-end depth anywhere. So you've got to go get back-end guys. You got to get somebody that maybe doesn't have to be a full-blown closer, but you've got to have somebody with some serious swing and miss stuff that can get out right-handers and left-handers back into that bullpen. And then probably add at least one other arm.
All righty. Thank you, Gordon.
Thanks,
we
Gordon.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Good stuff.
Okay, guys. Take it easy.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.